Foundry Chocolate is an artisanal manufacturer based in Silverdale, North Auckland. They recently won the Bean to Bar Champion Award at the 2024 Outstanding Food Producer Awards. The winning bar is a new 70% dark chocolate made with cacao sauce from the Dak Lak region of Vietnam. But all is not well in the chocolate world. The price for a tonne of raw cacao recently spiked at $12,000 US per tonne. For context, just 12 months ago, it was less than $4,000. To find out what's going on and how it's impacting the price we may pay for chocolate and a business like his, we welcome the Foundry owner, David Herrick. Congratulations on your award, first of all.
Thank you, Catherine.
Great to have you with us. Raw cocoa, is it, by the time it's being exported? Or is it cacao when it's being exported? Talk us through the life cycle.
So what it starts off with is it's a seed that grows on the trunk of a tree. And that seed pod has to be collected and harvested and grown. And there's different varieties of trees, and there's industrial grades, there's commodity grades, and there's craft grades of cacao. That goes through some levels of processing at origin. It gets fermented and it gets dried, and then it gets bagged up and sent off to wherever the manufacturing takes place if that manufacturing's not happening at the source of origin. And so all chocolate, be it industrial chocolate or then craft chocolate like we make, is all made from cacao beans.
So when you open, it looks like a great big kind of seed initially growing on the side of the tree. What's inside when you open that up?
Oh, they're fascinating things. So the cacao pod is anywhere from the size of a small rugby ball to a large rugby ball to, I've even seen some the size of a grapefruit. You open that up and there's 30 or 40 seeds inside. Each seed's about the size of a large almond. They're all clustered together in like a big blob of seeds, basically, with a central joining part.
Looks a bit like a brain to me when it's initial.
There's words like placenta and mucilage and all sorts of fantastic terms like this. But they're covered in this pulp that's a sweet and sour kind of white pulp. That pulp, when you eat it, is delicious. The seed inside is really unpleasant tasting.
Bitter
and worse, and to the point you actually spit it out if you bite into it. And how this tree's evolved is the pod can't fall off the tree by itself, and the pod can't open by itself. It's evolved so an animal, say a monkey in the South American forest, comes along, rips the pod open, eats or licks all the sweet pulp off, and the seed then gets discarded. A new cacao tree grows, so it's a fantastic life cycle.
That's why we have chocolate. Someone has to spread my seed for me, right?
Yeah, and someone in the last 5,000 years or so discovered that when you ferment these cacao beans in a pile of all these seeds in their pulp, microbes eat the sugars in the pulp, the fermentation process happens, and all this fantastic chocolate flavour notes and the benefits that come from that are created.
And here we are. Tell me about your award winner.
So this is a gorgeous chocolate bar. It was 2 years in the works. So our chocolate we make using only cacao beans and organic sugar. We don't add anything else to it, no added flavour, because we don't need to. We've got 7 different single origins from a Tanzania, Uganda, Peru, Vietnam, India and Mexico. And our newest release is from Ikar, which is a sub-plateau of the Dak Lak Highlands in Vietnam. When you eat it, you get tasting notes in our chocolate bars. And when we were doing our test roasting, we couldn't believe what we were discovering in this. We get notes of like a creme brulee, which then moves through to like a beautiful buttery toffee note. Then there's this most gorgeous aromatic tone that I get that holds from the opening the sack of beans through the roasting, through our cracking and winnowing when our stone grinders run for 3 or 4 days all the way through. And you start to get this gorgeous aromatics flooding through your palate. And that is the bar that won the Champion Award at the Food Producer Awards.
So what are the final notes by the time someone opens it and
You open it up and you get the most, you can smell it straight away. It's fantastic. So I get, creme brulee, this buttery toffiness comes through, and then like gorgeous woody aromatic spice tones. And what's amazing, you don't have to be an amazing palate to taste it. You eat it and you go, whoa, I'm actually tasting these things.
So how long from receiving the cacao, the beans, to the final product, and just in a little more detail, the process you'll go through?
Oh, gosh. So we start off, we open the sack of beans, they go onto a sorting tray, and I'm hand sorting the beans to pull any things out that we don't want. The main thing I'm looking for in that is actually rocks. because we can't run rocks through our equipment because you don't want to eat a rock, and also a rock breaks our machinery. We then roast them. We've got gorgeous gas-powered coffee roasters built to our specification. I've been playing with the temperature, the rotational speeds, the air flows, then my end of roast temperature. That process takes about an hour to do that. The beans, I let them settle for a day or so. As they're still all like gorgeous and roasty inside, I'll crack and winnow them. So the cracking and winnowing, the beans got this outer husk on it. And that's of no benefit to chocolate making. And also the bean, you have to break it into small pieces so you can then move on to the next stage in the chocolate process. So that's called cracking and winnowing. We then move them into our stone grinders, which are they're quite an old-fashioned, very old-fashioned way of making chocolate, but it's what most craft chocolate makers use. They hold about 43, 45 kgs of chocolate once they're up and running. The nibs go into those, and the nibs are solid at that point. But what they really are is a cacao nib, is about half cocoa solids and half cocoa butter all kind of together. When they go into our stone grinders, they get crushed up by these fantastic granite wheels. That starts releasing the cocoa butter, and there's friction happening at the same time, which creates heat. And so you start having this gorgeous liquid, 100% pure chocolate inside. And in the stone grinder, the smell coming from that is it's exquisite. Then we move through and we add our sugar. We're using a gorgeous golden organic unrefined cane sugar we get from Brazil. And then we set our stone grinders running and we come back in 3 to 4 days' time as they're going and going and going. By the end of that point, the microns of the chocolate is so fine that you can't detect any texture in the chocolate. You're just getting silky, gorgeously smooth dark chocolate.
How does one learn all this? How does one become a chocolatier? What was your path?
Oh, gosh. About 10 years ago now, I was reading a magazine. In the back of the magazine, there was this tiny little article on the inside back cover about someone making chocolate from absolute scratch in London on a micro scale. And I was like, you can make chocolate without being an immense industrial chocolate manufacturer? And I didn't tell my wife, Janelle, about this. I bought some Kraft chocolate bars, and I didn't really understand them or particularly like what I was eating, but I just loved the thought of making chocolate. So I, again, without telling Janelle, I sourced some cacao beans locally. I stuck them in our oven, not knowing what I was doing, roasted them, not knowing what I was doing. I'd worked out I had to crack in one of them by this point, so I got a Snaploc bag and a wine bottle. I smashed them up, went and got Janelle's hairdryer, winnowed them in a stainless steel bowl on our deck outside and covered myself in husk, and then I put them into our blender with some sugar, and I ran the blender for about 3 hours until the blender started smoking and died. At that point, I had to fess up to what I was doing. And I just technically made chocolate, and it was this hot, gritty, acidic paste that tasted absolutely horrible, but I just made chocolate, and it was incredible. And so from that point, we talked about it. We agreed to put a little bit of money into it. We bought a basic little coffee roaster, a little electric one, a basic stone grinder that, unbeknownst to us, was broken at the time, and we decided we want to make two-ingredient Kraft chocolates, only cacao beans and sugar, nothing else. We sourced 51 different samples from around the world, from craft specialists and little farmers, and brought them into New Zealand, made test batches of chocolate of 13 bars each, and we ate them. And we made a list and ranked our list of what our favourites were. Now, our family and friends said they were amazing, so I was like, oh, well, my family and friends always say that kind of stuff. I took some bars to a couple of specialist chocolate judges in New Zealand who promptly swore at me because what I was making was so good, and we thought, well, we've got something here, and we launched our little business in September 2018.
What were you escaping from whenever someone takes risks like this and takes a big leap like this? They've come from somewhere, because you've obviously brought some know-how with you as well.
Yeah. Well, my long-term background's marketing, so I've worked in business roles and corporate head office kind of jobs, and I'd always had a long-term goal. I mean, friends can remember me telling them at university that I always wanted to own my own business, and I always wanted to have employees and kind of give back that way. And we now own our own business, and we now have employees, and we've just moved to a fantastic new site in Silverdale. We've been sold out the past 3.5 years, and we're now in a position where we can start increasing our production and slowly and carefully onboard new customers and grow what we do, and it's really exciting.
That part is an important part for two reasons. One is obviously what you're doing is labour intensive and it's artisanal, and the temptation is to become more and more mechanised. But you've got to have cash flow and you've got to have a sustainable business. Where are you at in that part of the journey?
We're learning, moving into a new production site, we've got a lot more overhead to cover. And we knew this. We've worked out all our break-even points, how much we absolutely have to sell every single month to basically break even. In the past 6 months, we've achieved and we've surpassed that point, which is fantastic, and we've now seen what we can do. And our forecasts are holding. They've held the whole way through. And we're in that growth phase and we're delivering on that, and we've got a waiting list of customers and it is working, which is really exciting.
Do you market directly or are you in some particular foodie stores? Are you interested in the supermarkets?
We do a real mix. We started off at markets doing the hard yards at the what was the old La Chagall French Market in Parnell every single weekend. I think we were there for 3 years, every single weekend, day in, day out. That set us up. Then the COVID, we had a website, we were selling online. Then the first COVID lockdown happened in 2020. Things got really quiet and we actually stopped our machinery running for the first time ever. Then we got a phone call from the team that were running the Chocolate Awards at that point in time, which is now part of the Outstanding Food Producer Awards, saying that you've won the Supreme Award of the New Zealand Chocolate Awards. And that was the last day that things were dull for us. It hasn't slowed down since. So from that point, our website lit up. People got into online shopping and prepared to buy chocolate online, which they now buy through our website. We ship overnight, and people love it for what they call chocolate emergencies. We had...
Faster.
we have a joke. There's some customers who it's a crisis when chocolate's getting low in their house, so we resolve that crisis for them. It's quite fun. At that point, we then had retailers get in touch with us, so we had to work out wholesale pricing and how we send bars to people and packaging systems. We had chocolate retailers from around the world start to get in touch, and now we've got a handful of specialist retailers in New Zealand. You can jump on our website and see them. We've got, I think, Farrow stores in Auckland, Moore Wilson stores in Wellington, a handful in Christchurch. And then we also have some great online New Zealand retailers, and then we have a handful of retailers in Canada and Australia, and we're talking to distributors in China, the USA and Australia right now.
Wow, it's all on. Now, back to the starting point of all this, which is the cacao. And what is happening? You're buying from a lot of different nations, of course, but we know that there's two countries in West Africa in particular that produce something like 60% of the cacao that begins all this. What's happening at the moment, and how worrying is it for them, first and foremost?
What's happening is, it's fascinating because it's affecting us on a personal, our own business level, but then looking in on a macro, big industry level, what's happening is like a perfect storm that's coming into play. So what the background is this is the third year of low production. As you touched on, 60% of the world's cacao, now I've got to differentiate here, you have industrial-grade cacao, which not really much care is taken in how it's grown. It gets processed industrially into like commodity chocolate. About 98% of the world's chocolate is industrial cacao. The remaining 2% is called craft cacao that craft chocolate makers use. So in the industrial markets, and primarily Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire, it's the third year of low production. They've gone from 5.3 to 4.9 to 4.5 tonnes, yet overall global demand for chocolate has risen. This has been caused by what started off with the drought, which then moved into two consecutive wet seasons. The wet seasons were so wet that the flowers on the trees actually got pushed off by the rain. Then because it's so wet, fungal disease has got into the trees, so the yields are right down. Yet there's more demand than ever for cacao. So a product that was last year was like, I think, $3,470 US a kg. On the futures market is getting to $12,000 a ton, because there's contracts that have to be met and there's demand out there and people still have to buy cacao to make the chocolate they need to make on industrial levels.
So where does that leave you buying the artisanal chocolate? Are you a little bit to one side of all this?
We're a bit to one side, yeah. But it's starting to affect us in two ways. So we already pay, and all craft makers do this, we already pay so much above the market price. We were paying on average of about 7,000 US dollars a kg when the market price was 3,500 US dollars a kg. We usually pay 20 to 30 to 100% more than the market rate, even more than a fair trade price, which is still far too low for us. So we're dealing with people who really care for their trees and tend for their trees.
Right. All right. Well, look, he's hoping for everyone's sake that there is a recovery ultimately from those weather. I know it's not the only story. The weather's not the only story.
Not the only story. There's been long-term under... The price has been so low that farmers haven't been able to invest in their farms. The trees are old. They haven't been tended properly because, again, the farmers can't afford to.
A decent price hike will you know, make things better at the other end for the producers ultimately and for land use choices.
That looks like that's happening, yes.
Thank you, David Herrick. Congratulations again on that win in the 2024 Outstanding Food Producer Awards.